Well, it has been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon. My hometown's been a warm week up there, unseasonably warm for this time of year. People been thinking about spring even though they know that they shouldn't. It is a trick to lure us out, to get us leaning the wrong way. And then that big March or April or May or early June blizzard will come along and teach us a lesson that we've learned too many times already, but which we could learn again, I suppose. This is not really spring. It is spring like spring painted on a brick wall, that when you reach in to pick the flowers, you bust your knuckles. So you want to be careful. It affects people in odd ways, and it affected Florian and Myrtle Krebsbach here this last week. They ventured out on a trip to Minneapolis, something they would never ordinarily do. There are no spring chickens in their early 70s, and Florian does have that 1966 Chevy with 42,000 miles on it. He's proud of that. And when you have a 66 Chevy with 42,000 miles on it, you don't just drive off to Minneapolis anytime you feel like it. Otherwise, pretty soon you'd have about as much mileage as anybody else with a 66 Chevy. Have to go buy a new one. But it was Myrtle's idea. She's been worried. She's been feeling like she has symptoms that sound to her a lot like symptoms she reads in a question and answer column in the newspaper. And so this last week, when she found a bump on the back of her head that had not been there before, and found some hair on her comb and blood on her toothbrush, it made her nervous, and she called down to a clinic in Minneapolis and made an appointment for a checkup. Which she could not go to a doctor up there around Lake Wobegon to get, because she's been to all of them already and they've all told her she's all right. So she had to come to Minneapolis for this. Lord, I don't know if they ever tried to come down here before, but they tried this last week, headed out in the morning, down the county road and then onto the state highway, and then they were on the interstate. My Lord, two old people scared out of their wits. Myrtle sitting on the passenger side, clutching onto her purse as if someone would snatch it from her. Looking out through those big, thick glasses make her eyes look like a lizard's eyes. Florian driving carefully 40 miles an hour down the interstate with the right-hand wheel up there on the shoulder, just easing along, as semi-trucks just exploded past them. Shoom, shoom. 20, 30 tons of semi going by. Myrtle thinking about her symptoms, worrying that she might die. Florian thinking about a truck coming up their rear end and eliminating them from the earth then and there. And when finally they got out of range of their favorite radio station and their favorite morning radio show, The Rise and Shine Show, it just faded away in thin air during their favorite part of the show, the swap and shop portion. When that was gone, they were just utterly lost, scared, and silent. Usually Myrtle kind of narrates a trip, reads off of billboards, points out interesting livestock. This time she was quiet. Finally, Florian said, as the semis went by, shoom! If it was up to me, he said, I'd just soon turn around and go home. Well, it was the wrong thing to say to her in the mood that she was in. She was in the mood where she was expecting him to say something wrong, and so had been working for some time on a speech in case he would. She said, oh, I'm sure you would rather just go home. You don't care, do you? You never did, you never will, so I don't know why I should be surprised that you don't now. You don't care if I live or die. You'd probably just soon I'd die and get me out of the way, wouldn't you? You'd just clap your hands if I died. Oh, yes, you would. I know you would. You wouldn't care. Then you'd be free, wouldn't you? Go off, do whatever you want to do. Oh, yes. He sat and listened to it. A man who drives a 66 Chevy with 42,000 miles on it is not waiting around to become a playboy, you know, but he listened to her go on, and he said, Florian said, well, he said, I would too care if you died. She said, oh, yeah. She said, well, do you tell me, how much would you care? Well, Florian isn't good at theoretical questions like that. He had to think about that for a while. She waited for about 5 minutes, and she said, well, I guess that answers my question. You wouldn't care one bit, not one bit, if I died. You wouldn't miss me. So it was kind of too bad, considering what had gone before. It was too bad that about a half hour later, having stopped at a truck stop, he drove away without her in the car. It was his idea to stop. He thought some coffee might settle them down a little bit, and so they had a few cups of coffee, and then the pie looked good, big slabs of banana cream lemon meringue. They sat and ate their pie in silence, had a little bit more coffee, went out, left the truck stop, got in the car, and then he decided he would use the men's room. So he got out and went back, and while he was gone, she decided she would use the women's lavatory. And while she was gone, he got back in the car and started it up and checked his side view mirror and pulled out onto the highway. Which may seem odd to you that he wouldn't notice her not being there in the front seat, but he had a lot on his mind and was thinking, which Florian does slowly so that he won't have to do it again. He was busy thinking about how much he would miss her if she were gone, and how lonely that big house would be without Myrtle around, and how bad he would feel, and how lonesome at night lying alone in that big double bed, and all those times during the day when you want to turn to someone and tell them something about what you read in the paper or what somebody said to you in town or something that you saw. And when he turned to tell her how much he would miss her and saw that she was not there, you could have knocked him over with a stick. He took his foot off the accelerator and he coasted to a stop. He pulled over. He didn't think she'd climbed in the back seat. He looked just to make sure. No, she wasn't back there. He didn't think she had jumped out. He would have noticed that, he thought. Wouldn't he? He would have noticed if she jumped out. And then he remembered the truck stop. My gosh. He'd driven for almost 20 miles. 20 miles. And then when he made the U-turn to go back, he noticed that he wasn't on the interstate anymore. That little ditch was missing from the middle of the road. He was on some other highway, and he didn't know which one. Nothing looked familiar to him. Everything looked odd. Even the fields looked odd, the houses and the barns. He had no idea where he was. He drove on a ways. He saw nothing that he recognized, no signs, until he came to a sign that said Bolivia. He never knew there was a town in Minnesota named Bolivia. But he drove in. There it was, filling station, cafe, a few houses. He pulled up to the cafe, he stuck his head in. The woman looked odd. She had big bulging eyes that put him in mind of those movies where people get lost, you know, in the country, and they ask someone for directions and they wind up having the blood sucked out of their necks. He He said, which way is the interstate? She said, oh, that's nowhere near here. Well, it must be, he said. I was just on it minutes ago. Oh, no, she said, that's a good 10 miles east of here. Which way is east? Well, she says, which way you come from? He said, that way. Well, she said, that's northeast. You go that way for a little ways until you come to a barn with a red man chewing tobacco sign on the side of it and a white mailbox and white rocks at the end of the driveways and a windmill in the yard. And when you come to that, you take a little Y. You head off to your left. You can't miss it. It's just a little ways down the road. He drove a little ways down the road, looked for that barn, looked for that house, looked for that windmill in the front yard, the white rocks. He didn't find it in a little ways nor in a long ways. Turned around to come back and drove a long ways, and now he couldn't find Bolivia. It was 12 noon. It had now been several hours since he'd forgotten Myrtle at the truck stop. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon when he finally got back there. He'd had a long time to think about his speech, but he hadn't thought of anything good enough. But she wasn't there. He walked in. He asked the waitress if his wife wasn't still there, who he'd left in the morning. The waitress said, you mean the woman in the blue coat? Florian couldn't remember what color coat she was wearing. Couldn't really remember how to describe her, except maybe as mad. The waitress said, oh, that woman. She said, well, her son come pick her up about 2 hours ago. She's gone. So Carl was in on it now. He was going to have to answer to Carl as well. Oh, Lord, he drove back towards home. He stopped in town. He went into the sidetrack tap. He thought he owed himself a beer and a bump. After all the trouble he'd been to and all that he was about to be to. Wally said, where's Myrtle? Florian said, she's home waiting for me. Give me another one of them schnapps. He headed out south of town finally, and as he drove out south of town and saw his place up on the rise, he looked, and there in the driveway was Carl's pickup truck. So he kept on going. Couldn't face both of them. He drove on down to the crossroad, down to the gravel road. He took a right. He drove about an eighth of a mile down to Roger Hedlund's driveway, turned around in it, parked by the side of the road, turned out his headlights, sat there as the sun went down, looking across the field towards his home, the lights on in the house, just waiting, waiting. Wondering what Roger Hedlund would think if Roger Hedlund looked out and saw him sitting there in his car. Car parked on a road out in the country, you know, kind of draws attention to itself, doesn't it? What would he say if Roger Hedlund come out and asked him what he was doing there, parked there? He guessed he would tell Roger that he was parked there so he could listen to a radio show. A Lutheran show, so the old lady wouldn't allow it in the house. Roger is Lutheran. He'd like that. And he was listening to a radio show, and it could very well have been a Lutheran. It certainly was not the Rosary. The preacher on the radio was talking about sinners who had strayed from the path, and a lot of it seemed to apply to him personally. About the path of righteousness being narrow, but broad is the road that leadeth to destruction. It seemed to recommend against driving on interstates. Preacher talked about forgiveness, But Florian wasn't sure that this was a preacher who knew anything about this. Had this preacher ever left his wife behind in a truck stop? And did he know what Florian was up against? Florian doubted it. And then a woman came on at the end of the show and sang a sweet hymn, softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling, calling for you and for me. See by the portals, he's waiting and watching, calling, oh sinner, come home. Come home, come home. Ye who are weary, come home. And Florian turned on his headlights and started out, not only because of the hymn, but also because the beer and the bump and the coffee was starting to back up and reach a point of no return in him. And there are a lot of crazy things Florian might do, but taking a leak in another man's field is not one of them. He was going to go home. And the moment he turned on his headlights, he saw Carl's headlights come on over in his yard, and Carl's headlights turn, the beams wave across his yard as Carl pulled out of his parents' driveway and headed the other way into town. Florian cruised up to his driveway. He turned his headlights out. He coasted on up. He put it in the garage, but left the door open just in case. Walked up to the house, put his foot on the step, was amazed that she had not locked the door. They never did ever lock it in all their years of marriage, but he thought she might have tonight if she'd known he was coming home. He stepped up on the porch and he could smell supper cooking, breaded fish fillets. He walked into the mudroom. He quietly took off his coat. He hung it up on a hook. He turned, and there she was, with her back to him, standing at the stove, mixing something in a pan. He took one step up into the kitchen and stood by the refrigerator and cleared his throat. She turned, and when she saw him, she dropped the spoon on the floor. She came running towards him. She said, oh, thank God. She said, I was so scared. Oh, Daddy, she said. Oh, Daddy, don't ever leave me again. She said, I'm sorry I said what I said to make you so angry. She said, you know I didn't mean it. Don't leave me again like that. He was going to tell her that he hadn't left her, that he had forgotten her. But she said, oh, Daddy, you know I love you. He was still going to tell her the truth, that he hadn't left her, he had forgotten her, until it began to dawn on him that in a way it would be better to leave somebody and to be dumb out of passion than just to be dumb and forget them someplace. And so he didn't tell. He lay beside her that night in bed, amazed that she should think he was capable of this, just amazed. After 47 years of marriage, she would think that he could walk out on her. Incredible woman. Got up in the morning, made scrambled eggs, sausage, toast, and coffee. She got up, she felt better. The bump on the back of her head was gone. There was no more hair on her comb, no blood on her toothbrush. She felt terrific. So did he. She said, do you think I ought to call down to that clinic and tell him that I'm not coming? He said, no. No, I'm sure they know by now. I'm sure they know by now that you're all right. Incredible woman, 47 years of marriage. Still things to be discovered. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking. and all the children are above average.